That's Clifford Brown and the Max Roach Quintet performing in 1955 what went on to become a jazz standard. It's called Sandu. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and a great program ahead for you. Just to bring you up to date in a flash, we still have, of course, you know this, what's going on in Houston, Texas, and Louisiana now, that Hurricane Harvey has backtracked to give a second round of rain and misery. So they're trying to cope with that. The death toll is rising. They have no fixed numbers yet. The last numbers I saw were 19, but it is not a hard number. People are expecting the toll to go a little higher than that. Quite a few quarrels, political quarrels, over who's doing what and who should have been doing what. But this is typical in a situation like this where everything is just confused and people are sorting things out or attempting to sort things out as they go. This is the nature of a disaster like this. And frankly, I'll say that compared to other disasters we have experienced, it's not as chaotic, although it is chaotic. By that I mean that there seems to be an established order that people are trying to cling to so as to have the process be more orderly. But, you know, just don't give up hope. People are doing the best they can, especially at ground level, you know, people to people. They're doing the best that they can to get through this very, very rough experience. So let's keep them in our prayers and in our good wishes that, you know, we don't see incredible damage, human damage is what I'm talking about. The other stuff will come and they'll take care of it later on, but the human damage has been enough. Let's pray that it doesn't get worse. All right. You know, this is a kind of event that while you hope that people will bring out the best of themselves and show the best of themselves, and most of them, I would say, do try. People do try in situations like this to offer the best of themselves. But you do have scoundrels out there who love a scenario like this. This is where they excel. They excel at ripping other people off. They excel at stealing all the nasty things, the underside is also to be remembered and not dismissed. It is in a situation like this where there's a lot of confusion and a lot of sympathy. People want to help. They want to know how to help and help quickly because they sense the human responses to try to respond as quickly as possible because you don't want people to continue suffering. And this is exactly what some people among us and some agencies and whatnot, they look to capitalize literally on these kinds of feelings because this is a great opportunity to make money. It's a nasty way to make money, but this is what happens in a situation like this. I thought I would ask our guest today, I mean, he's scheduled to talk about something else, but this is right up his alley. He is Charles Ortel, familiar to us here in the search for the truth about the Clinton Foundation and its operations. But he's very familiar with how so-called charities, and a lot of them will be popping up right around this time, how charities, fraudulent charities, take advantage of people at this time, and what's one way or several ways, whatever number you might be able to offer, how do we respond in a way that gets us to help, but also gets us to exercise caution and common sense? Charles,
Well, thank you,
welcome.
Deidre.
After all of that, I didn't say hello, Charles. Welcome to the program.
Okay. Sure. Well, thanks for having me back on, Deidre. It's my great pleasure. It really is a sad thing to think about here, and I join you in sending my hopes for the many families on the ground, on site, down in Texas and Louisiana and the Gulf Coast. The many people there who are suffering, the many people related to those people who are worrying about their loved ones. Let's hope we can get through this, and let's hope that the damage in physical and human terms is as low as it can be. But it sure looks ugly from the initial reports coming out. Now, when we go back through, and I've only really started thinking about this in depth since 2015, but when you go back and you think about what happened here in September 11th, 2001, and the degree to which people, not only in that, inside the United States, but around the world, just, without a moment's thought, just spent billions of dollars to try to help here in New York, and I'm sure the same thing will end up happening down in the Gulf Coast. In that environment, sadly, you're absolutely right, Yatrice. There are just a lot of human beings who are just filthy vermin, frankly, who come out of the woodwork in these moments and either raise money saying that it's going to go to charity and steal it, or elect to go ahead and, brutally gouge the cleanup costs one way or another. And, that unfortunately does seem to happen in every natural and other major disaster. And so far, neither government, not a major party, Republican nor Democrat, has been able to make examples of the brigands who do this type of work. I mean, we've talked many times in the past, Patrice, about what happened in Haiti with that disaster in January 2010. Now, 7 years later, more than 7 years later, there still is no accounting for what happened to, some say, as much as $14 billion that went to one of the poorest places on earth that arguably is in worse shape in 2017 than it was in 2010. As we think about what's going on down in Texas, Louisiana, what happens is there really are an enormous number of wonderful people in the United States of America and around the world. And because of the internet, because of modern technology, it's very easy to send money in small bits and bobs over the internet to try to help out. And unfortunately, what tends to happen after these disasters is that these floods of money go washing towards sites, and people don't check carefully enough, first of all, to make sure that the site that's receiving the money is actually a charity. And second, what are the fees and charges associated with sending that money over your phone or however you do it? And then finally, what actually ends up happening to the cash that's going down there? Oftentimes, at first, it's not cash that's really needed. It can often be, physical presence, that you need people down there on the site to fish people out of the water. These cages of Navy that's floating down and around, trying to help people now presently in Texas, Louisiana. That's not simply a question of money. The other issue, of course, is that it's not as if the federal government and the state governments and the communities didn't think about this before it happened. There is a fair amount of money already down there. There's a fair amount of resources already down there. And oftentimes what happens after these disasters, it's not in the instant that they happen or the immediate aftermath where it's so important to have attention. It can be, 6 months from now or 9 months from now or 15 months from now when the real help is going to be needed. So I'm hopeful that because Americans across the political spectrum are quick to open their hearts and their wallets and then really roll up sleeves. I'm hoping that this will get back to normal quickly. I'm actually gratified. Initially, you know, the discourse in this country is so polarized right now, and I was actually asked on short notice to comment earlier this week about some, I'll just use the word, it's not a nice word, but some idiot was saying that the people of Texas, specifically in Houston, are paying for voting for Trump without kind of thinking through the idea that the mayor in Houston is a black Democrat, and that I don't think, you know, whatever powers that be that sit on top of the planet, I don't think they say, oh, okay, we've got a hurricane coming up. Let's punish the Democrats this time, or let's punish the Republicans. I mean, that was just a stupid comment, and there was a certain amount of frenzy over it in the beginning, saying, yeah, it's because of Trump this happened. I think people are, you know, back on planet Earth again, realizing how stupid that approach is. And I hope we'll now come together and see what can be done for the people of that area, see what we can learn from. It looks pretty brutal down in Louisiana right now. I gather there's another hurricane taking shape over west of Cabo Verde in the Atlantic Ocean that's headed our way, too. So got a lot of dangers in this hurricane season, and let's hope we all learn from past mistakes and you know, get things back in order as quickly as we can.
Well, I agree. I agree and endorse that view. I want to switch to the topic we originally had planned to discuss, and that is the apparent resurgence of the Clinton Foundation and doling out charity, of course, because charity is one of the biggest things that it does, doling out charity in African countries and doing it very quietly, but apparently following the old business model. So could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad thing to see, really. And, you know, I'm hoping that governments, state governments, federal governments, foreign governments are listening to this broadcast, or that they will listen to it afterwards. That when you really dive deeply into the long history of the Clintons and their various, in theory, in quotes, foundations, you find them modeled on what Bill was impeached for. You know, the central planks of all these charities seem to be that you lie under oath in your reports about what you're actually going to do and what you did do, and then you obstruct any investigations. Those are the ways that they've gotten away with so much for so long. And those were, in fact, the two counts out of, I think, four original counts. There were two in which he was impeached for lying under oath, obstructing justice. He was also disciplined. Just looked at it today again. The Susan Weber Wright decision out in Arkansas, when he fessed up to what had happened with Monica after he had lied in a deposition under oath, he was disciplined for that, for contempt of court. He was seriously disciplined by her and then subsequently by the Arkansas State Bar and by the Supreme Court Bar. So if you are prepared to lie under oath, and if you have had the time and, you know, the stature to put your people in power all over the place, you can do what the Clintons do, and that is, you know, you can set up these fake charities, ensure that the required regulatory techniques are all gamed. You know, you hire crooked accountants, tell them to look the other way, or not just to, you know, not even look much at all, and then you ensure that you have allies in places like New York and Mr. Schneiderman, and places like California, apparently, where Xavier Becerra, the Attorney General, is unwilling to do his job. And, you know, you also make sure that you insert somebody like a Lois Lerner and her various people into the IRS. And you're the former president of the United States with a wife who might be president of the United States someday. And, you know, the political class is unwilling to go after you. So once you establish that, and it sure looks to me from the record, and FBI, you should be listening to this, yeah, the record that's in the public domain on the FBI vault file concerning the original investigation starting around February 2001 under Mary Jo White, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, and then she was replaced by James Comey, it sure looks to me as if the FBI was stopped from doing its proper job there. they should have been able to win a conviction against not simply Bill Clinton, who was a key employee, I would argue, at that point, somebody in a position to exercise significant influence over the foundation, even though he wasn't a named officer. They should have been able to stop this fraud before it escalated to the global scale on which it's been operating since 2002. So, but they haven't done that. And, you know, sadly, around the world, there's a lot of corruption. And the notion that a former president might be corrupt does not come as a surprise on the African continent, in Southeast Asia, in the Middle East, you know. And even to this day, when you talk about it in the United States of America, there are people who say, come on, Charles, you know, all politicians are corrupt. Open your eyes. Just get over it. But in charity land, that's normally not the case. And particularly when it comes to international charities, there are, for the U.S., in the U.S. system, they're more tightly controlled. And, you know, you're supposed to make sure that when you say you're going to help the people of Malawi, you actually help the people of Malawi and not the crooked ex-president who is currently Joyce Banda, who, of course, set up her own foundation and who currently stands accused of stealing as much as $250 million in one of the poorest countries still on Earth. You know, the game becomes, and sadly, across Africa and the very poor countries, there are all kinds of people, myself included. I began in college actually studying economics and politics in Africa and the Middle East, traveled extensively over there. There are all sorts of well-meaning people with connections who are willing to send billions of dollars into these places, but not willing to do the kind of tough work that should be done to make sure that the leaders of the countries and the government officials don't steal all the money and leave the poor people of these countries in, you know, worse shape or than they may have been when we first got there. So around that mess, what you see now in over 20 years of operation of the Clinton Foundation, all of the international operations of the Clinton Foundation, which are extensive, I would argue, are illegal, never been validly organized or operated. And no one really knows what actually happened to all this money, because through December 31st, 2009, they didn't have even make a pretense of doing a proper audit of any of the books. And this was when it flourished, taking hundreds of millions of dollars in theory to fight HIV/AIDS around the world. There wasn't even a pretense made of doing the basic work to check from the inside the books and accounts, the real books and accounts of this bevy of supposed charities around the world. No one took the time and effort required to really check and see what had happened. And then when all the fuss and bother under the Obama administration happened and they reorganized the charity, they, you know, like any good magician, they said, you know, don't look over here, and focused everybody's attention on the period January 1, 2010 forward. Well, to make it very simple for those of you who are not comfortable with accounting, you cannot produce a set of books on a foundation that is all wrong. You can't do it. You have to go back to the very beginning, which is October 23rd, 1997. You have to explain why this foundation never filed a tax return for the short period October 23, 1997 to December 31, 1997. You have to explain why it never got a legally compliant audit through the period December 31, 2004 when it was building this complex out in Little Rock. You have to explain all that. You have to correct all those filings. And you have to then beg for mercy to the various government authorities. And of course, they haven't done that.
I was under the impression that the Clinton Foundation had been served notice here in the United States that the foundation and its activities were to be curtailed until certain requirements were fulfilled, including these reports that you're referring to. The foundation seemed at one point to shut down or temporarily curtail its operations, indicating, at least publicly, that it was obeying the warning that it got. And it was it laid off 30 people in New York City. It was tightening up its operations. In fact, it was shutting down some operations, but here we have this report of the Clinton Foundation basically opening up shop in Africa. And typically, this is the approach that the Clintons take. They go to poor countries, mostly black, and they do their thing there. So is this what is happening? Have they transferred their less than savory operations now into Africa with these countries? And by the way, they include Malawi and Rwanda. Not Rwanda.
Rwanda.
And Tanzania.
Right.
What is that they insist on committing these slights that are just on the borderline or just blatantly, in fact, infractions of international charity law?
All right. So let me see if I can answer that question properly. So in the first instance, I think what you're referring to is the reports that came out last year that they were going to shut down something called the Clinton Global Initiative. Now, the Clinton Global Initiative was a very clever, I would argue, fraud. And, you know, it was never actually a charity. What it was a, you know, an expensive party. If you look at the books and the records, this big spending for it began in 2005, where they initially spent, I think, almost $8 million on a party in New York. Now, you know, New York is an expensive place, and you know, parties can get expensive, but $8 million is a lot of money to spend on a gathering for 2 or 3 days, even if you have to prepare in advance, even if there's a lot of security. And the basic premise of it was very simple, that in my mind, and actually there have been different stories written about it, but the basic principle was that in September each year here in Manhattan, towards around the third week or so, the UN General Assembly happens, and most world leaders come to this city. So they're already here. So you don't have to pay for them to fly from Malawi and Tanzania, they're already here, and they need something to do. So what better thing to do than come to some forum run by Bill Clinton where you get to go into a room where the attendance is barred to the public, the opposite of a true public charity. It's not benefiting the public at large, and you control who gets to go inside the room, and you've got all these leaders, you know, some of whom are honest, many of whom are dishonest, and many of whom, you know, have their levers on the hands of power inside these countries where wannabe rich people and actual rich people can grease the palms, you know, one way or another, of these leaders, of their intermediaries, to obtain mining concessions and telecommunications deals and banking deals and other investment deals and special favors in each of these countries. And it really was, in hindsight, almost comical when you ask the question, what could possibly go wrong? A lot has gone wrong with that Clinton Global Initiative. There was one, I want to say it was in 2006, Bill Clinton paid special tribute. You know, the theory was that the rising young generation of wealthy people were not being generous enough. So he singled out a young man for special praise and set up his own foundation. And this man was a complete fraud. He had no money. He had arrived here in New York. He claimed to have connections to the Vatican. He claimed to be able to sell off surplus real estate owned by the Catholic Church. He used these claims to find his way literally into the arms of the famous actor Anne Hathaway. They were dating for a while. He set up a fake foundation. He even spent, I believe, New Year's Eve with the Clintons down in the Dominican Republic and this Anne Hathaway. And, you know, they were taken for hook, line, and sinker, and the guy ultimately went to prison and I think went back to Italy where he was from. These forums, you know, were in charity world, the way it typically works is if you want to take a deduction for a charity, you've actually got to part with something of value. If you're not ready to part with something of value, whether that's a security or an asset of another kind or cash, you could make a pledge, but pledges are not deductible. You know, even unconditional pledges are not deductible. You have to part with something. The Clintons came up, they're very good with words, and they came up with something that sounds wonderful. Neither a pledge nor a contribution, it's a commitment to action. And that really sounds very, very major, right? I'm going to make a commitment to action. What is that? It's nothing. So these people would get up and, you know, one person would make a bigger commitment than the next. So one guy stood up, and this guy, I believe his name is now Sir Tom Hunter. He promised to give away, I forget if it was $100 million or $1 billion, some fantastic sum. And then, you know, once the dust settled, he got a tremendous amount of publicity for it. Once the dust settled, it turned out what he was really doing was promising to give a percentage of his future profits. Anyway, and he had some setbacks. We all had setbacks in the 2007-8-9 time frame. So he scaled back his commitment. But nonetheless, he has a charity in Scotland called the Hunter Foundation. And they have the Hunter Foundation and the Clintons have gotten together and created something called the Clinton Hunter Development Initiative. Now, if you go on to the Hunter Foundation website, you learn some interesting things. The first thing you learn is that Sir Tom Hunter and Lady Marion Hunter, his wife, have come up with this idea of calling something, what they do, venture philanthropy. Now, there is no such thing as venture philanthropy. You are either a philanthropist or not. You can't mix making money with giving money away without going through some extraordinary hoops. The first hoop is that you have to make sure that whatever you do by way of charity is actually charitable, that it under U.S. law, that it fits specific limited tax-exempt purposes which have been approved in advance by the United States of America IRS. Through truthful filings. You got to make sure you do that. Under English law, and I'm not a lawyer, but I know how to read, under English law, they call tax-exempt purposes objects. It's the same idea. The objects of the charity must be charitable. And under English law, the charitable objects are laid out to be very much more or less the same as what they are here in the United States. Now, if you are conducting your charity lawfully, pursuing your purposes or objects, you can certainly take assets of the charity and invest them in ventures and have the profits of those ventures fund the objects or purposes of the charity. But you may not, you know, go down into a country like Malawi and say, I'm a great person, I'm going to give $10,000 away, and by the way, give me this big farming contract so I can make a lot of money farming. You're not allowed to do that. And when we go through, in the case of the Hunter Development Initiative, when we go through that in some depth, there's no evidence in the Clinton filings that any legal agreements were ever struck between the Hunter Foundation and the Clinton Foundation that assigned responsibilities and controlled those various ventures, as you say, in Malawi, Rwanda, and Tanzania, not only in compliance with local law, but especially in compliance with U.S. and Scottish and U.K. law. There's no evidence of that I see in the filings. Now, maybe those legal agreements will surface someday, but to date we haven't seen them. Under U.S. law and under U.K. law, you can't have, you know, sort of a happenstance association. You have to have, has to be tightly controlled. And when you have 50-50 joint ventures, by definition, those are never tightly controlled. No one's really in control of them. So, you know, the legal paperwork there, we deserve to see it. We haven't seen it. And what Sir Tom Hunter has done, which is actually quite noteworthy in an American context, is he's put on the board of his Hunter Foundation a very famous individual named Vartan Gregorian, who's an American, you know, Horatio Alger type story, an immigrant, I believe, of Armenian descent, brilliant student. And found his way ultimately to being president of the New York Public Library, I think president of Brown University, I think a senior person at Stanford, and for years now, head of the Carnegie Foundation, or whatever it's called, which is, I think, one of the oldest and most prominent global or American foundations. And obviously it has a major name in Scotland, because Andrew Carnegie was from Scotland. So here's a guy on the Hunter Foundation board who does, I've checked the Carnegie filings in New York State and elsewhere, they respect the law at the Carnegie Foundation, but the Clinton Foundation doesn't. And why this gentleman would agree to serve on the board of Hunter's charity sort of escapes me. And then there's another curious fact, in that this gentleman is Maggie Haberman's father-in-law. So, you know, where's the curiosity at the New York Times over what the Hunter Foundation is actually doing? or are we back to business as usual with the New York Times? They only go against vigorously against their enemies by publishing, for example, Donald Trump's tax return on the front page during the election. But as we learned from Cheryl Atkinson's book, Smear, on page 242, the Times by August 2016 knew that the Clinton Foundation was under investigation, but decided that that wasn't relevant.
We have to go back a little bit from your earlier days into this foundation. What does this indicate to you about where the foundation is headed and whether legal authorities are close to finding something or what? I mean, it seems odd that you shut down, in a sense, your New York operations for all intents and purposes, and then we find that you really are alive and well in Malawi and in Rwanda and Tanzania. What's going on?
Well, it's a great question, Yatrice. I mean, I ask myself, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm not being coy. I'm not interested in politics. But I have been involved as an agent, as a principal, buying and selling companies. And Donald Trump, you can say what you want about him, has a lot of experience with very difficult situations where some worked for him, some didn't work, like the casinos in Atlantic City, but many did work. And, you know, it's not like people took a gun to his head and said, you know, you got to run for president. You know, it wasn't anybody's idea but his own. He decided to do it. He, you know, may not have expected to win, but he did win. And it's a miracle to me that Donald Trump has not cleaned out the IRS, cleaned out the Justice Department, cleaned out the FBI. And there's so many obvious conflicts of interest that have come to light in recent days. The great Tom Fitton down at Judicial Watch and a guy I think named Clevenger have been trying to get records of the supposed investigation into Hillary Clinton and the email server. And yesterday, I believe, Clevenger was denied because supposedly the public doesn't care about it. That was the answer from the FBI. Said, we're not releasing the records because the public is not interested in this. Excuse me? The public's very interested in this. And so we have, unfortunately, a situation here where the inmates are running the asylum still. We don't have line agents in charge of the FBI, these investigations. I believe the line agents of the FBI understand that this is the largest unprosecuted fraud in human history. I mean, these are all the affiliates. It's not simply the Clinton Foundation. It's the Global Fund. It's lots of other allied charities. And they're sitting there saying, you know, what the hell? I mean, you know, we have to expose this and we have to punish people, is my guess. And then because this does involve Republicans and Democrats, we're able to fight to a stalemate. And then people will say, well, you know, if we really pull on this string hard all the way back to Arkansas, we'll be exposing Republicans in Arkansas. We'll be exposing Democrats. Why didn't the Bush people go after this from 2001 to 2008? What's that all about? Are there skeletons in that closet? And, you know, I think actually in 2017, when we look at, you know, these opinion polls about what people across the spectrum think of politicians, I think there's actually surprising common ground between conservatives and progressives. We think that all politicians suck. And, you know, that it is time to go into Washington, D.C., and we may disagree with Donald Trump for different reasons, but it really is time to drain the swamp, you know. Don't let that all that extra water from Texas and Louisiana, you know, feed the beast in Washington, D.C. Let's go in there. Let's drain the swamp. Let's find out what happened at the Clinton Foundation and before they continue this practice in too many more countries. So what I've been calling for, and no one wants to do it yet, is the right thing to do here is to appoint a conservator for the Clinton Foundation. There are many smart people and law firms and independent people could go and be a conservator. Get on the inside of this mess, figure out what really happened, figure out who's at fault, hold those accountable. And, you know, all the while we have in contrast the example of Corinne Brown. And I gather, Yatrice, you know a lot about her. I only know what I read. I mean, here's this almost 70-year-old, I believe, congresswoman, black congresswoman from Florida, who's going to be sent up the river for multiple lifetimes, it looks like, for operating an $800,000 slush fund for like 4 years. And the Clintons have been doing this for 20 years, and they're not being prosecuted. There's no where are the grand juries on this? You know, why was the investigation of the email done the way it was done? You know, why were the Clintons allowed to keep federal property, that is to say, the records, all these, you know, records while she was Secretary of State in the various mansions in Chappaqua and down in Washington, D.C., and who knows where else all those records were? Why was she allowed to do that? You know, and minor functionaries get severely punished for smaller infractions. Where's the outrage over all that? You know, you just because you're president of the United States or Secretary of State or a cabinet member, that doesn't mean that you get to, you know, treat the property of we the people as your own personal property. And so the short answer to the question, I've given you a long-winded answer, is that the regulatory apparatus is not up to the task yet of holding to account multinational, international foundations that are supposed to be controlled from the U.S. base. It's just not up to the task. And it's apparently too tempting a money stream, you know, for the various people who feed off the beast, the lawyers, the accountants, the political insiders, the investment players. It's too valuable, too tempting to shut it down. So they just keep this kind of stuff going. And, you know, they've had every opportunity to mend their ways. They've proven under a Republican president, then under a Democratic president, now under a new Republican president, they seem impervious to control, unwilling to admit the depth of their depravity. And, you know, there needs to be an example set of this. They need to pay a serious financial price. And if Corinne Brown is going to go to federal prison, then why shouldn't the Clintons if they're convicted of a similar crime?
Oh, the current project that they have, allegedly have, in Malawi, Rwanda, and Tanzania boasts a collaborative effort with 150,000 farmers. And the project is to help these farmers increase their yield and, you know, do some solid work in the science of farming and so forth. Knowing what you know about the Clinton Foundation's operations in the United States and in other parts of the world, first of all, do you believe this? Do you believe these projects are working as described?
Let me put it to you very bluntly, and I will not use any profanity, but let me just tell you that I'm sitting in a table here across the street from Grand Central Station, and it is far more likely that Elvis Presley will roll his white piano in the front door of this atrium and start playing for me. It's far more likely that that will happen than that there are 150,000 farmers being helped anywhere by the Clinton Foundation. There are no controls for this foundation. Nobody knows. Nobody, it's not what they say. People, the Clintons are great at the promising things and talking about vague ideas and suggestions. Where is the verified proof? These people have never produced a financial audit, a real financial audit, since October 23rd, 1997. That's 20 years later. Never done it. They filed reports in multiple states and countries around the world. Not a word of those reports are true. They've never been verified. So why should I believe that they're helping 150,000 farmers anywhere? Show me one farmer.
But wouldn't you think that projects described this way as being in effect by a foundation, that this would come to the attention of an international regulatory body and they would raise some questions about it?
There is no such thing. That's the issue. See, it's like the Wild West. I mean, there's no international regulator. There's no one. So charities in the United States are regulated primarily by their home state attorney general, typically. In this case, the attorney general of Arkansas. You know, I got in touch with that office 2 years ago. They've done nothing. And they certainly don't. They're short-staffed. The standard answer you get when you call to speak to any of these state governments is, well, you know, we're short-staffed, and, you know, this is really a little bit beyond us, and we don't have the resources to send people to Africa and see how many farmers are being helped by the Clinton Foundation. And so it falls through a hole in the cracks. And, you know, one wonders, looking at this, whether regulations in the law have been established to give the appearance that regulations will work, as opposed to really having binding effect. I mean, to try to do this, try to check this 50 years ago was very difficult. But now you do have Google Earth. You do have the Internet. And you can do a lot of processing, a lot of analyzing with a lot less capital than you might have needed even 10 years ago or 5 years ago. So you should be able to check this. And there are big organizations that do operate in multiple countries that, if they wanted to, could actually do a real audit and check every single place where the Clinton Foundation operates. What is the local law concerning its operation? I'll give you a case in point. I've checked Tanzania. Tanzania and many other countries, and no, I'm not casting aspersions on any country or any nationality, but Tanzania is a sad case. There are strict laws. You have to register to operate there. You have to have a local board representatives. You have to file local reports, I think, with three different agencies. You have to actually be a charity. And what happened in Tanzania? If you Google Tanzania and fraud in central bank, you'll discover that within the last 10, 15 years, there was a sordid episode where in Tanzania, the government officials were stealing the money. The very regulators were stealing the money. And so, you know, that you have, there's a, one of the board members of this Clinton Foundation is a man who's made a lot of money around the world and in Africa and telecom. And he even has one of the things, his charity, which I believe might be the island of Jersey-based charity. Now, the island of Jersey until recently had no regulations on charity. So we really don't know exactly what it is he's doing in his charity. This man sits, daughter sits on the board of the Clinton Foundation. And he created something called the Ibrahim Corruption Index, where some group puts out, you know, a ranking of, you know, who are the most and least corrupt countries around the world. And he also gives a prize away, or at least the foundation his foundation gives a prize away to try to encourage people in corrupt areas not to be corrupt. Now, how could that possibly go wrong, one wonders. But anyway, the problem is that particularly when you go into these places and you take people like me who, you know, grew up and went to Ivy League schools and, you know, I was raised here in Manhattan, you know, it's tough to understand what life is really like in Tanzania, where there are no hospitals and few paved roads and the population is scattered in rural areas. There are very few airports and there are typically no heliports. Trains are rickety. The cars are in bad shape. It's, you know, it's just very, very different than the United States of America, where we have invested a tremendous amount of money in this country over centuries now. It's a different place. But there's a lot of desperation. Desperate people do desperate things, and money disappears. So there's, you know, you can't expect some assistant in the Arkansas Attorney General's office to really check and see what the hell the Clinton Foundation's doing in Rwanda and Malawi and Tanzania with some Scottish dude and his charity. You're not going to be able to check it. And, you know, the real question here is, you know, do we want to check it? Because if we wanted to check it, we could.
This is very disheartening because there is so much evidence, I mean, tangible evidence available that should encourage or embolden investigations here, especially because they involve a former president, a former secretary of state, who also was a former presidential candidate. And we have a foundation that isn't fulfilling even the most basic tenet of what charity law requires and still functioning. And totally, in fact, it seems to be begging for a confrontation because it says, this is what it's portraying, we do what we want. You can't touch us. We are beyond your laws.
And I think there's somebody's written a book, Yitri. I think there's a book tour coming up, and the book cover poses a very interesting, you know, two words. What happened? I would add a question mark and demand answers. What happened with the Clinton Foundation? That's what I want to know. What actually happened? And they have until November 15th, 2017 to answer that question. That's when their final federal tax returns are due. And there's no extension possible beyond that date. And on this radio show and subsequent appearances, I'm calling on the Clinton Foundation to amend all of their tax returns, state, federal, and foreign, starting with the first one that's never been filed, covering the period October 23, 1997, December 31st, 1997. Show us some real tax returns. Show us some real financial audits. And strong advice to the current trustees, you should cease fundraising right now. Every day that you continue fundraising, you're adding to your legal liability, in my opinion. And, you know, you put a conservator in there to find out what's really going on, get rid of your existing law and accounting firms, get to the bottom of what happened to all that money. And, you know, people with significant net worths on that board better understand they're going to have to make restitution here.
I was just going to ask that question. Even if, you know, that is done, it still leaves in the lurch people who countries have received some kind of help, even if they didn't know the details as to whether that help was legal or not, whether it was allowed or not. Where does that place them?
Well, I think the way the law seems to work in the United States is that when a donor, when we address the question of private foundations like the Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, when a donor like that gives money to something and says that they've made a donation to a public charity, like the Clinton Foundation is supposed to be a public charity, and it turns out that it wasn't a public charity, then the way our laws are written, the donating charity has to try to get the money back. And if it doesn't even try to get the money back, which appears to be the case when it comes to the Gates Foundation, they've been in this mess starting as early with the International AIDS Trust in 2001, but really picking it up in 2005 forward. I think they've made over close to 100 separate donations to this mess, and they're not stupid people. So the foundation, fortunately for the Gates Foundation, they have a lot of money. But I would argue they should have made an effort to get the money back. They failed to do that. And it's up to the IRS to figure out what sort of punishment should, and the Department of Justice should be meted out. Then when it comes to these various governments, the French government is given the largest donor through this thing, Unitaid in Switzerland, the largest single donor by far to the Clinton Foundation, approaching $500 million, or about a quarter of all the money that we know about that may have been sent towards the Clinton Foundation. The French people should be asking the question, what in the heck has been going on here? How could the French government, which is not exactly a poor government, and it's not exactly filled with people who aren't intelligent and experienced operating around the world, how could the French government in 2006 have hooked themselves up to this cesspool and allowed hundreds of millions of dollars to go out of France, to be hived off the tickets of people who travel out of France, in and around France? How could they have allowed this to go on? How could they have an investigation start in December of 2009, issue a report in 2011 to the French public, and not catch this back then when it was so obvious? It's obvious in the records. How could the United Kingdom, Tony Blair was leaving, sign up to send up to £1 billion in 2007 over 20 years, to Unitaid, which in turn a large portion in the early years was destined to go to the Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS initiative, which didn't legally exist. How could they do that? You know, why did the government of Korea sign up to be part of this? And how about all the other small member states of UNITAID? Why did they all do this? And why do the people of Norway, who today are suffering because, you know, the social welfare costs are high and the prices of energy are low, and their state, you know, the fund that they have, their sovereign wealth fund, is being depleted. Why were they so willing to let tens of millions of dollars flow to this Clinton Foundation AIDS initiative when it didn't exist? And why did they enter into...
We should put a little plug in here because we're out of time. And what I'd like to ask you is to return and finish this discussion off, because it is way too important to ignore. So,
delighted.
All right, great. So we'll come back and finish this discussion. It is extremely important. Very, very, very important and newsworthy. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Global Alert News with Dane Wigginton. So thank you for listening today. Thanks. And again, just keep your ears open. More information coming on this new revelation of the Clinton Foundation rising again. And where? In Africa, in Malawi, in Rwanda, and Tanzania. This is like VD, a disease that just won't go away. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.